Welcome to the first of the fond farewell episodes of the Dave and Marty radio show. I'm sad to say that my great friend and co-host Marty Dunn passed away unexpectedly on June 15th, 2020. Marty's passing was a great loss for our community, and I felt that it was important for this radio show to have a proper coda that commemorates our dear friend and colleague. I've collected fond memories and stories about Marty from many people who have known him over the years. It's impossible for me to reach out to everyone, so if you have a story or memory that you would like to share, please give me a call or send me an email, and I'd be happy to follow up with you. First off, I wanted to share with you how this radio show came about and why it was so important to me and Marty. I think our inspiration was no doubt a real radio show, the Sports Junkies in Washington, D.C. Marty and I were both fans of the show, probably because the format involves four old friends who grew up in Prince George's County, Maryland, and who discuss not only sports, but also their lives and pop culture and whatever else crosses their mind. Marty grew up in Prince George's County, Maryland, and I grew up in Harford County, Maryland, and we always shared a bond about our similar upbringings in the Maryland suburbs, and I think we very much related to the conversations that the Sports Junkies had on a daily basis. In any event, back in 2009, we came up with this idea to share our love of the securities laws with this community while at the same time not taking things too seriously and sprinkling into their show our thoughts on pop culture and music and growing up in the 70s and 80s and the like, and the podcast format that we called a radio show was the perfect vehicle for that. And Marty and I were amazed at how the show really touched people over the years. We would often have folks come up to us at conferences and they'd be eager to talk to us about something they heard on the show, but usually it wasn't the securities law parts. I think people who listened to the show really got to know us because much of what we talked about was so personal, you know, what cars we owned, our favorite albums, what concerts we attended in our youth, our favorite Christmas presents, and so on. I think the radio show had a big part in a period of our careers where we toured around the country speaking at conferences together as basically the Dave and Marty show. As I said in my blog about Marty on thecorporatecouncil.net, we would travel around the country like a pair of securities law troubadours, bringing the Dave and Marty show to so many conferences and events, although I must admit it was mostly the Marty show. As you can imagine, we really had a great time on those trips. We met so many great people, and we got to know so many great parts of America. Marty was the kind of person who made friends anywhere he would go, and it was always so much fun to be around that energy. For a variety of reasons, we stopped doing the show back in 2013, even though in that year we came to work together at the same law firm. We often talked about starting the show up again, but it seemed that our relentless travel schedules and our work and personal commitments always would get in the way. And I think both of us were very excited to start the show up again this year. Our journeys had really brought us back to where we had started in our post SEC careers with a desire to really use this platform as a way to share our continuing love of the securities laws along with all the entertaining stories and observations that people seem to enjoy hearing on what was otherwise a professional podcast. And I went out and purchased some recording equipment and we recorded a few shows in person, but then the pandemic hit and we had to resort to recording by telephone. And I have to say, you know, that was definitely not the same when we weren't in the same room where we would always be laughing together and making jabs at each other as we recorded the show. I really would have never imagined that our discussion of which is better during the March 3rd radio show of this year would have been our last performance of that old standby. If you get a chance, go back and listen to how much fun we had discussing those silly topics. I recall thinking at the time that the magic of the radio show was really back, and I was really looking forward to keeping this thing going. Now I'm going to turn the show over to the great friends and colleagues who want to share their special memories and stories about Marty.
I'm now joined by Steve Bochner, who's a partner at Wilson Sonsini Goodrich & Rosati, and Steve's going to tell us about one of his favorite times with Marty.
Yeah, thank you, David. You know, I met Marty in the mid-'80s. He was at the SEC and was immediately just taken with him. You know, he's just a unique person, funny, humble, charismatic, nice. And before I launch into my story, I'll just say, Marty and I have been on the speaking circuit now for a long time, and I've chaired a couple of those. And you and Marty, when you're together, and Marty, when he was alone, always got the best reviews, because I think that combination of just how funny, humble, and how interesting a speaker he was, and just a sort of a normal good guy you want to hang out with. So I was attracted to Marty right away, and we became friends and have been friends ever since. And his passing is a huge loss for the securities bar and I think all of us personally. I guess I'll mention two things about Marty that I remember. One is we would get together in San Diego, and he'd always insist on going to McPease, which is the Navy SEAL bar. And I thought that's probably the best place to get beat up by a Navy SEAL. I never saw why he wanted to go there, but we'd go there and have beers, and he loved what a kind of a normal, homey place that was, and the contrast between a bunch of securities lawyers talking about the law and then going to McPease for a beer. But you know, right before the conference, I was clearing out my mailbox at my home, and I had all these annual reports and proxy statements, and I take them, and it was kind of the internet was becoming quite accessible, and I just stick them right into recycling. And I thought to myself, why, you know what, we're killing a lot of trees here. It seems like a lot of waste. You know, I can get this stuff now online. Why are we doing this? So I asked Marty out for a drink in San Diego right before the Securities Regulation Institute conference. So we went out to Old Town, sat down, and as Marty tells it, had a margarita the size of a Buick. That's a direct quote. And we started talking, and I said, Marty, you know, why we have this thing called the internet now, why are we sending all these paper copies? And by the second margarita, we had really come up with the whole e-proxy idea. Let's just send people a card if they want a paper copy. Go ahead and call in, get your paper copy, but have the default mechanism be access on the internet. And so it's something I know Marty was proud of. He went back to the SEC and sold it, and the result was e-proxy. It remains a bit controversial today, but I think it's in the right direction, a good thing, and Marty was instrumental there. And I think I'll just end that story with the fact that he was instrumental in so much important rulemaking and just bringing the securities law complex issues down to a level that business people could understand, and, you know, all of us in the audience watching him could understand. So he'll be greatly missed, and my condolences to you as his good friend and all of us and his family.
Thanks, Steve. That's a great story, and it's amazing to think that the rulemaking went from cocktail napkin to bubbles in the Federal Register.
Yeah.
And now I'm joined by Brock Romanek.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for this opportunity to share some thoughts about Marty. A few weeks ago, I, with my hands trembling, I blogged my appreciation for Marty on my new mindfulness blog, realgoodfresh.com, and blogged about how Marty helped me get back into the SEC for my second tour of duty when I was at my lowest. It really was the biggest boost I've had in my life, and without Marty, you know, I wouldn't be talking to you. We wouldn't have known each other. Marty and I started our legal careers a few weeks apart back in 1988, fresh out of law school at the SEC. He wasn't in my branch. He was just down the hall on the way to the men's room. So I always remember walking by his office, and he turned and looked. You know, he had an office mate. We all had office mates. But he would turn and look out, and always had this big smile on his face. You know, and of course, I knew him because that's the way it was back then. We were all right out of law school, not married, and a lot of us went out afterwards. It was really kind of a different scene than it is today because of you sort of had these new classes in the fall when law schools got out that would start together. Marty quickly rose through the ranks, and for good reason. His mind was like a trap. His ability to explain something simply that was indecipherable to others was uncanny. He really knew his stuff. I wouldn't say I was jealous, but I mean, I just never met anyone like him. And then he went from knowing, you know, learning everything to then creating the stuff, you know, being the primary rule writer or overseeing those that wrote the rules there in Corp Fin for so many years, so many of those rules that we have today. Yet despite all that knowledge, all that power, as he rose to the ranks, he was always Marty, just authentic, approachable, really willing to talk to anybody at any time about anything. So those are my favorite memories of Marty, being like that, those years in the 90s when he was holding court in that crummy hotel bar after SEC speaks at the Capitol in Washington, D.C. Many staffers who didn't attend SEC speaks would come over after work, because it was usually on a Friday, and join those of us who had. It was sort of an unspoken annual event, and it was a blast. It was really the highlight of the year for Corp Fin. So while all, you know, everyone else was at the alumni dinner for ASECA, we were over there being in the thick of it. Marty was always in the thick of it, loving to laugh, telling great stories. And it was his presence that always got us all together. And in this instance, this little bubble happening on the outskirts of SEC Speaks, that's what I remember most about Marty for some reason. And, you know, Marty remembered all of us. Whenever you saw Marty these days, whenever you reminisce, you learn things about yourself that you had long forgotten. I swear he had a photographic memory. So one last thing I'll note is that he wasn't afraid to say I love you. When I last saw him in January at a dinner with you, Dave, me, Marty, and a few others, in honor of my departure from the corporatecouncil.net, you know, as we departed, Marty told me he loved me as we departed, and it was intense because I had never heard that from him, and it was just like, wow, man, wow.
That's great. Thanks very much, Brock.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave.
And now I'm joined by David Ladd.
Hey, Dave, the story that I was going to relate involves attendance at the Securities Law Convention on Coronado Island, which is a must for East Coast attorneys to escape the winter and spend a couple of nice days in San Diego. So anyway, at the time, I was working at O'Melveny & Myers, and O'Melveny was sending a contingent out to the conference, and Marty was going to be panels, as was his usual custom. And, you know, as was his custom, you know, Marty kind of packed hurriedly late at night and early flight out. And we get to Coronado, and I get a call, and Marty says, hey, can you come down to my room? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, so when I was packing, I grabbed my blue suit and threw it in my suitcase. And when I got here, I checked, and I didn't grab my blue suit. I grabbed my blue jacket. And so I don't have pants. And, you know, I'm going to be doing, you know, a bunch of panels, you know, today and tomorrow. He said, you know, can you help me out? Because I'm kind of stuck in the room. And I'm like, sure. Let me go down and talk to the concierge and see what we can do. You know, at that time, I guess part of the challenge was that the waistband size of Marty's pants was considerably larger than the inseam length. And so there was going to be a little difficulty in finding that particular pair of pants. And so, you know, the Hotel Del Coronado has some internal stores, and there's no luck there. I talked to the concierge, and the concierge kind of gave me a little bit of an eye roll. And she says, wait a second. She says, does all you need a pair of blue pants? And I said, yes. And she said, well, she says, the building custodians have a blue uniform, and there is one guy who might have the right size. So I kind of went down into the bowels of the Hotel Del and found the guy, and he's like, sure. And size looked like it was going to be right. And so he gave me a pair of his work pants that had just come in from the cleaners. And that's how he saved Marty for his onstage performances for the next 2 days.
That's great. And, you know, it's a tribute to how persuasive Marty could be to get people to do stuff for him.
Indeed.
And now I'm joined by Amy Starr, who worked with Marty at the SEC's Division of Corporation Finance. Thanks for joining me, Amy.
Thank you. When I arrived in Corp Fin in the summer of 1992, I first met Marty, the then OCC Deputy Director and Boy Wonder, also known as one of Linda Quinn's favorite staffers. I had the great privilege to work with Marty closely through the years, and I have some memories I want to share. When I was in OCC, Marty would have me set up meetings, but there was a big rule. No meeting could be longer than the average sitcom. Marty said that was the extent of his attention span. And sure enough, about 20 minutes into any meeting, Marty would be doodling. But Marty actually had an amazing focus and ability to cut through the chaff. When we were doing securities offering reform, I was walking Marty through the various roles. At one point, he looked up at me and said, "I don't get it." Next thing I know, Marty has put the entirety of the securities offering reform rules into an easy-to-read chart, which is currently in the front of the release. My third, but of course not remaining memory, is a Marty during holiday times. Every year at the time of the holiday party, Marty became the general, grabbing his troops to get the big white coolers and taking them all in his pickup to get the ice and the beer so his favored division could enjoy. And I want to say thank you for everything, Marty.
Thank you, Amy. And on the doodling front, I always noticed he started doodling as soon as I started talking, so I guess he wasn't very interested in what I had to say. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And now I'm joined by Jonathan Ingram, who worked closely with Marty in the Division of Corporation Finance at the SEC.
Hey, thanks, Dave, and thanks for putting this together. There are, you know, a lot of little things I remember about Marty. Marty didn't like meetings to last more than 22 minutes because that was how long he said his attention span was. He never drank coffee. He always came to work with a big gulp. Diet Coke. He often left work early to coach his girls' soccer practices. His birthday was not just a birthday. He called it International Marty Day, and we would celebrate it with friends and families at a tavern near Baltimore. Marty would reserve the upstairs room for dinner and drinks, and the celebration was never over until Marty belted out Thunder Road. But if I had to think of a story, I think it would be from December of 2000. I had just joined the chief counsel's office, and Marty was running the shareholder proposal task force for his first time ever. He had never done a shareholder proposal because Bill Morley, who had recently retired, had always been in the program. I had done shareholder proposals for a couple of years, so Marty asked me to be his lead manager on the project. So we headed towards Christmas break, and we didn't have a team yet. It was just me and him, which was not a good thing at all because the program was usually up and running pretty well by then, and the no action requests were really starting to pile in. And to make matters worse, I had a pre-scheduled vacation and headed out of town for about a week or two around the holidays. And when I got back, I could barely get into my office because my desk and my floor were filled with stacks of papers. Marty had gone through all the no action requests that we had received, which must have been around 50 or 60. And he had researched them, wrote memos for them that contained his legal analysis and recommendations, and prepared the outgoing responses for them. He had left them for me to review his work. Well, I think he got almost all right. If it hadn't been Marty, would have been unfathomable for someone who had never done them before. But perhaps more than that, the fact that at his stature, he picked up 50 to 60 new action requests as a first-level reviewer and did all the grueling legwork to get them done showed me that no person is above any task. Marty was a great friend and a mentor. I miss you, brother.
Thanks, John. That's great. And Marty was often an army of one on things like that, where he could just take hold of the task and bring it to completion. I'm pleased now to be joined by Stan Keller.
Thank you, Dave. I'm happy to be able to share these thoughts because Marty was indeed a force of nature. He was a marvelous securities lawyer with a rakish sense of humor. And what I'd like to do is share three images or recollections of Marty that have stayed with me over the years. And in some ways, these will be a little bit in reverse chronological order. So the first is really the times we spent together at the San Diego Securities Regulation Institute at the Del Coronado Hotel. And that program usually concluded with the Marty Show, which was everything you wanted to know about securities law but was afraid to ask. And that was the highlight, and it concluded the program because everybody wanted to stay to hear Marty, both to learn and to be entertained, which they were. And so three images from times at the Del Coronado. The first was invariably coming and seeing Marty on the back porch of the Dell with a drink in his hand, sitting there with Shelley Parrott. And Shelley has shared with me that while she and Marty were so different, she loved him like a brother. The second was then seeing Marty at Miguel's across the street from the Dell, having tacos with a big margarita in hand. And the third image, and probably the strongest, finally was Marty at McPee's bar down the street having drinks with all of the Navy SEALs who were there, and he fit right in with them. So those are images that'll frankly stay with me. The second recollection goes way back when Marty was at the SEC. I think it was when he was chief counsel. Maybe he had risen higher by then. He rose to be deputy director of the Corp then. But I think this goes back to chief counsel, and I needed very quick SEC blessing for a tender offer by a company that was registered because of a debt offering, but was a private company and was wanted to give the uninvolved shareholders the opportunity to obtain liquidity. So it was doing a tender offer. And it had a very brief window that basically ended on the weekend to use the funds, its available funds, for a distribution under its loan agreement covenant. And so I submitted a request to the SEC, and I got a call back from Marty, of all people, on a Sunday, while I think he was watching a Redskins football game, who had taken it home with him and was working on it. And we got the necessary relief in time, and to me, that really shows dedication and, frankly, the hallmark of the SEC staff back then, and I think still true today. The final recollection really is a story I was happy to overhear Linda Quinn tell about Marty. And Linda Quinn, of course, is the legendary former director of the Division of Corporation Finance, who's no longer with us. And it was a story she told to someone who was important, and so important that I don't remember who it was. But the subject of Marty had come up. And Linda said that when Marty was a very young lawyer who had just joined the SEC staff, he had been given an assignment on her behalf to look into something, research and evaluate an issue, and report back. And so I think that she said it was the first time that she really met and dealt with Marty. He came to her office to present her with his analysis and the answer. And Linda indicated that she didn't agree with his conclusion, to which Marty responded that she may not have fully understood his reasoning, to which Linda said, "Are you saying I'm stupid?" And then without missing a beat, Marty said, I wouldn't quite put it that way. Linda then said that, told us that she knew then that she had someone who was very special in that young lawyer. By the way, she also added that Marty's analysis, in fact, turned out to be the right analysis. And that tells, I think, everything you need to know, both about Marty's qualities as a securities lawyer and his rakish sense of humor. So we often say that someone will be missed. And in the case of Marty, that's absolutely the case. Marty will be sorely missed by all of us who knew him and who are dedicated to the securities laws. So I hope these memories help us all.
Thanks very much, Stan. I really appreciate it. And now I'm joined by Julie Hoffman, who worked with Marty in Corp Fin.
I first met Marty in the fall of 1994 when he interviewed me to start at Corp Fin, and I realized how nice he was, but I didn't realize how incredibly smart he was until I started working the next fall. And after listening to him at a brown bag, I realized that he knew everything about everything and every little exception to the rule, which I realized that I needed to never talk to this guy because he would find out how little I knew. So I spent maybe the first 6 months of working in Corp Fin trying to avoid him until I think he figured it out, and he came up and he asked me if he had done something to offend me because basically whenever he came up into a conversation, I ran the other way, and I realized he wasn't that fearsome, and he was really giving and able to explain difficult concepts to make it easy. So I ended up learning quite a bit from him and Court Finn. And my second story that always brings a smile to my face is it happened on Marty's birthday in 1998 or so. And that was back when he would call it International Marty Day. And we were out in a bar in College Park celebrating. And the song Brandy by Looking Glass came on. And he stopped the conversation and he sang that entire song with just such joy. And from then on, whenever I heard that song, I've always thought of Marty and just how fun he was. And I've always, that song has always put a smile on my face, and I've had it on my phone for maybe 5 or 6 years now. And I always think of Marty when I hear that song.
That's great. Thanks so much for those memories.
You're welcome.
And now I'm joined by Anne Marie Tierney, who worked with Marty and Court Finn back in the early days.
That's so mean to reference how many years ago it was. But yes, when I first joined Court Finn, Marty and I were in the same pod in Jim Daly's group with a bunch of amazing people. And Marty and Amy Bowerman were office mates, so I spent a lot of time with them. And I was thinking about back in those days before we had technology, we would all try to rush to get our comment letters done in order to get them off the overdue list that was maintained by the front office. And back in those days, you basically had a word processor you could type letters out on, but when you printed it, to get them out, you had to go to the front office and stand in line at a fax machine. And there was only one fax machine for the whole division. And so I was remembering a day that our pod had a bunch of letters that had to go out, and we were all standing in line at the fax machine. And Marty comes up and tries to cut the whole line with some sob story about how he was working on like some big rule release and he had to get the letter out. And people actually started like elbowing one another and almost came to blows over the fax machine. And I think we did ultimately let him cut in. But yeah, that was one of those crazy periods where I can't even imagine now having to fax things out or, you know, stand in a line and send comments out. But that was a great time in my career, just remarkable, great people. And Marty was amongst the best of those. And Marty was one person that everybody in the industry knew could explain integration in a way that I never could. And I remember him sitting with me one time just with like pencils and a piece of paper mapping out what integration is and how it works among the different exemptions and the 33-Act rules. And I think the next generation of lawyers is going to have a real hole in its ability to analyze those rules, because he was such a public person. He spoke with you and so many others on so many panels and added so much value to our industry. He'll really be greatly missed. And I know we as his friends won't ever forget him, and what he's brought to the industry will always be part of the tradition of the SEC. But he'll be greatly missed.
Thanks very much for sharing that.
My pleasure.
And now I'm joined by Brian Brennan.
Thanks, Dave. Boy, I have so many great memories of Marty. I was thinking about this. The first time I met him, I went in for my call, my sort of final round of interviews, and it was with Alan and Marty, Alan Beller and Marty. And Alan walked in probably all, you know, dressed in his typical, you know, shirt and tie and suit. And Marty came in with a sports coat on. I'll never forget, like, he had one of those sort of summer bracelets on, which were kind of peeking out of the side. I thought to myself, I think I'm going to like this guy. He seems like he's pretty easygoing. And of course, he was. And when I joined the commission, we became friends, which was great. I invited him and Linda up to the Hamptons to visit my parents' house one summer. And as it turned out, that Sunday there was a Gaelic football game. Both of my parents are from Ireland. My father was a big supporter of his Gaelic football team. And so I said, hey, do you guys want to come down? It's early on a Sunday morning. And we went down to this local Irish pub out in the Hamptons. And I have to tell you, like, by the end of the game, he was probably the biggest Mayo fan. My father's from a county called Mayo in Ireland. And my father always asked about how Marty was doing because of the time that he spent there. And fast forward a couple of years, Mayo was in the playoffs, and my dad happened to be in D.C. that weekend. So we went to Fido, which is over by the SEC's old building, as you may recall. And my father said to me the night before, hey, is Marty going to join us? And I thought, well, I laughed. And I said, you know, I don't know. Maybe he would, you know. And so I sent him a text. I said, hey, you know, kind of randomly out of the blue, you know, my dad's in town. We'll go, oh, boy, he was there the next day, and he was hooting and hollering. And unfortunately, my father's county has a great track record of getting into the what they call the All Ireland, which is like the Super Bowl of the team. But unfortunately, they haven't won it in many years. So, but anyway, that's one of my fondest memories. He was obviously always up for joining a good party, and he really kind of lived life with great vigor. So I'm sitting here smiling, even telling that story now. So sad day that Mr. Nardi Dunn is not with us anymore.
Absolutely, and thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you all for joining me for this fond farewell, and please stay tuned for the next episode.